Today's shiur is Masechta Yevamos Daf Kuf Tosvav, and we will begin on Daf Kuf Yud Dalad Amud Beis, the third line of the Gemara. As we had learned in the previous shiur in the Mishnah taught us that a woman, although normally to say Eidus regarding a Dovah Sheba'erva, we need two kosher witnesses. Chazal is Shemiguna Akila Barabonan, because not to leave a Jewish woman, Chas V'Shalom and Aguna, were lenient and accepted the testimony of a wife to say that her husband passed away. However, the Mishnah taught us that leniency does not exist in the time of war. Ask the Gemara, Amar Rava, my Tamid the Muhammad. Why, indeed, in time of war, is the wife's testimony not accepted? Answers the Gemara, Mishum the Amr B'Dami. In the time of war, when a woman will come say testimony, and we're concerned, she's not going to be accurate. She'll only say what she thought happened, not exactly what happened. Sakadatach, because she will think that her husband was in a place where there was a battle. Bekol Hani de Iktal, who pulled it? Amongst all those that were unfortunately killed, could he have escaped? Intim Tzoloima, and even if you'll say, Kivin de Sholem Beinoi Lebeinoi, Natra Techazia, since they were referring to a situation where this couple is living in harmony, certainly a wife would not leave her husband wounded, and she would not leave and know until she knew for certain he was dead and could not be helped. Says the Gemara, Zinu de Machle Begira Bermumcha, sometimes he will be hit by an arrow or spear, the Savar Vademais, and shall think that he certainly died. And as Tosfos explains, since it's an area of battle, she sees and assumes that her husband has been mortally wounded. It's not a place for her to stay, and she'll go away, even though her husband is not really dead. Because the ikad of it, samakri v'chaya, sometimes, even if he was so wounded, they could put on different types of medicines, dressings, and she will survive. Continues the Gemara, Savar Rava Lameima, Ravan Eina Kamachama. Ravan wanted to say that a time of famine is not considered like a war time, the Le'amr B'Dami. And therefore, if a woman comes to say testimony that her husband passed away, it's not something that you're just saying based on conjecture. It's for sure what happened. Hodam Rava. Then Rava retracted, and he said, Ravan Harei Kumachama. The time of famine is considered like a wartime where a woman's testimony is not accepted. And he says an episode to prove the point. Dehida Asutl Kameh de Rava. There was a woman that came in front of Rava. Amrullah. Amrlei Bali Meis Barov, and she said, my husband died in the famine. Amrlei, so Rava wanted to test her if she was saying something that she actually saw her husband die, or was it just something that she assumed? And in fact, the Chaznish says, from our Gemara we see that even though our Mishnah Gemara are teaching us that a woman's testimony is accepted, we don't just accept the testimony. She comes in and says her husband died, and we accept it. What we try to do is test her to see if it indeed is what happened. Amala, shap of it. So he told her, you did the right thing, the shizaf snafshach, that you saved yourself. Salkadatach, did you really believe the Bahari Porta de Defisa, with that little amount of flour, the shafkaslay, that you left for him, havachai, he could survive? So he was testing her to see, did she see that he died, or did she just assume that he died? Amrla, and she responded, Ma nami yada, you see, I did the right thing. You also realize the ki agav nalachai, he couldn't have survived. So he saw that a woman's testimony in a time of famine is not necessarily accurate. Hada amarava, Ravan, not only don't we accept a woman's testimony in time of famine, just like we don't accept a testimony in time of war, but actually grieve a machama. It's even worse than at wartime. Deal a machama. If during a wartime, ki amr meis bal, if she said my husband died, but machama, during the war. That's who Delay Mehemna. She's not trusted because we're concerned that she's saying only something that she assumed, not something that she knows 100% for sure. Hameis Amitasai. But if it was wartime and she comes and reports that my husband died in his bed, not at battle, Mehemna, then she would be believed. However, Vilugaba Ravin, in the time of famine, add the Amr Meis Vikvartiv. It's not enough that she just say, I saw him dead on his bed. She has to add that she even saw him buried. And as the Mefarshim explained, why is a time of famine treated more stringently than a time of war? The Mefarshim explained, because even if it's a war time, but if he died in his bed, that means he wasn't at the area where there was battle. So there's no reason for her to run away and not be there as he dies. But in a time of famine, even if he died in his bed, obviously the area where he died was an area of famine. It's an area where people don't stay, and therefore she left. Along the same lines, the Mefarshim explained, the Meiri says, that when she says he died on his bed in the time of battle, it's obvious that the Melchama had nothing to do with his death. And therefore, it's a regular situation, whereas we've been learning, the woman's testimony is accepted. On the other hand, when she says that he died in time of famine in his bed, wherever he died, he's being affected by the famine, and therefore, she's not believed. Unless she actually says, the Kvartiv, I buried him. Continues the Gemara. Mapolis, if a building collapsed, Harei Kumchama, it too is considered like a time of war. The Ba'amr B'Dadami, she only says what she assumed to have happened, not necessarily what actually happened. And as the Mefarshim point out, when the Gemara here says Mepilus, that a building collapsed is considered like a time of war, what the Gemara means to say is that there was like an earthquake and all the buildings in the city were collapsing, and therefore she might have run away, or she might have assumed that he didn't survive. But if only that building that he was in collapsed, but it wasn't that all the buildings in town were collapsing, then she would be believed by Mapilus. For example, the Pesukim say that, let's say, one a wife comes and says her husband was in a car crash, in a train crash, even though it's a terrible situation, there is no reason for the wife have left the scene of the accident, and therefore she would be believed. Similarly, says the Gemara, Shiluach Nechashim V'Krabim, it's a time where there's snakes and scorpions attacking the city. Harei Kamechama, it's also like the time of war, Damar B'Dadami, and she's not trusted. Dever, but what is the situation when there's a plague, when there's an epidemic? Amalei Harei Kamechama, some consider it like a time of war, and her testimony is not accepted. Vamila Enakal Mecham, and others say it's not like a time of war, and her testimony is accepted. And the Gemara explains the two opinions. Amalei Harekul Mechama, some say that it's like a time of Muhammad Darim B'Dadami. She's only going to say what she thinks happened, not what she knows for sure to happen, because she's running away. She wants to get away from the place where there's this epidemic. Ramalai Enikam Acham, it's not treated like a time and a place of war. The Samchi Ad Amri Inshi, she relies on what people used to say. Shev Shnin Have a Mosna. For 7 years it was a plague. The Inish Blay Shani Lay Izal. But a person didn't lose any of the years that were allotted to him. Nobody dies in an epidemic unless it was his time to go. And therefore people are less concerned, and she will remain and will be able to say for sure that her husband died. Ask the Gemara, Ibailhu, Hezikoi hi Mechama Ba'olam. As far as we know, there is no war in the world, and therefore, if she comes and says testimony that her husband passed away, her testimony ought to be accepted. But now she comes and says there was a war. Mahu, will we trust her testimony or not? She didn't have to lie. She could have said there was peace in the world. We didn't know that there was a war without her. Once we know that there was a war, in the time of war, we're always concerned that she is not being accurate in a testimony. Also Mali Lashakar, and the fact that we don't see that she should have lied, Umara Haskasa, and therefore we can't accept the testimony. And as the Mefarshim explained, this is based on Taisvis, on the Rajba, on the Ritva. Throughout Shas we have a concept of Migui. Migui is that if a person wanted to say something not true, could have said a better Taina. Mala was Shaka, if we wanted to say it on truth, why did he have to say this? So here too, she didn't have to say there was a war. However, the Mefarshim ask fundamental questions. Here, it's not an issue that we're concerned that this woman is a liar. Where our concern is that in a time of war, the woman didn't really pay close attention to her husband's death, and she therefore says he died, when she didn't actually see him dead. That doesn't change with a migui. Says the Rajban the Ritva, but the Gemara here doesn't mean to say that this would be a classical case of migui. This is certainly not the regular situation of migui. What the Gemara is saying is, since we're relying completely on her testimony, and we see that she's trying to be as open and truthful as possible, perhaps under these circumstances we should accept the testimony, or perhaps not. So Rashi asks, why don't we have an answer to this question from something we learned in the Mishnah? The Mishnah said, the beginning of the Mishnah taught us, that if a woman testifies that her husband died in a time of peace, she's believed. Now, says Rashi, if we think into the Mishnah must be referring to the same situation that's being discussed here, where she came and told us there was war and that her husband was killed. Because if the Mishnah is referring to a situation that he died in bed, we just finished learning in the previous Gemara that then even if we know independently that it's a wartime, if she's testifying that he died in bed, she's believed. So it must be that the beginning of the Mishnah is referring to a situation that we assumed that there was peace in the world. She's the one that told us there was war in the world, and she tells us that her husband was killed in that war, and the Mishnah teaches us that she's believed. Answers Rashi that that's not necessarily what the Mishnah means. What the Mishnah is telling us at the beginning of the Mishnah is that she didn't speak about war or peace. All she did was she walked in and she said, "My husband died," without saying that it was in bed or at war. There the Mishnah tells us that given that we assume it's peacetime, a simple statement that she says, "My husband died," is accepted. But there's no proof that under the circumstances that we're discussing, that she says there was war, will she be believed or not? Toshma. So Gemara attempts to bring a raya from the following braisa. The braisa says, "Ishino lein abayis." A woman walks in and says that my husband and I were in a house that was set on flame. "Ishino lein b'ma'ora." We were in a cave that was set in flame. "Hu meis." He passed away. "Vanina tzalti." And I was saved. The loch is in an amenas. She's not believed. Now, isn't this a situation where she's the one that established there was a war? She's the one that established there was a fire? And we're concerned that she's not saying the truth? Answers the Gemara Shani Hossam. That's a different situation. The Mirinlo, we are concerned and we are saying to her, Kehecha de Lidoch Yitzrach Hashnisa, just like you are the Nais, that even though you were in a place where there was this terrible fire, you somehow got saved. Perhaps a miracle happened to him also, and therefore we can't trust your testimony because we're not sure that you actually are testifying that you actually saw him dead. Toshma. And there is a machlokes rishonim how to understand what this Gemara is trying to accomplish with this Toshma. Some explain that the Toshma here is an attempt to answer our original question, that if it's the wife that established that there's war in the world, will she then be believed to say that her husband died? Others say that the Toshma that we're going to learn now is a kasha, that the Gemara is asking a stira, a contradiction between the braisa that we just finished learning of Ishino Lein Ubayis versus this braisa. The braisa says, if a woman walks in and says, Nafalenu Avdi Kachavim, we were attacked by Avdi Kachavim. Nafalenu Listin, we were attacked by Listin. Humeis Vinitzalti, he died and I was saved. So the halach is Namenis, that she's trusted. So no matter how we understand the kasha, don't we have a proof that a woman is, if she's establishing this war, she's also believed to say that her husband died? Or the Gemara is asking a question: why in the previous case is she not believed, and in this case is she believed? Answers the Gemara: Hasam Kedravidi. There's a very unique situation in the case that we're now describing. Damrav Idi, Isha Klizayno Aleha. A woman has her weapons on her. And here too the Rishonim have two explanations. One explanation is, a woman is not concerned about getting killed because she knows that the attackers would prefer to violate her. That's one pshat. Another pshat is that a woman is not afraid to get killed because she knows that these people who attack have rachmanis and will not kill women. And therefore, she will not run away from her husband until she unfortunately sees her husband died. She's not worried about herself because she knows that they won't kill her, either they'll violate her or they won't do anything to her. So the Mefarshim explain these two explanations that we just gave in the Klizayno Aleha. There are two nafkaminas. One nafkamina is if the woman is an older woman. So if Pshan Isha Klizayno Aleha, that they'll violate her, they may not violate a woman who's old, but therefore she will be scared. If, however, Pshat is that they have rachmanis on a woman, it makes no difference what age or what shape she's in. Another nafkamina I saw is, will a woman who's not the wife of the man that was killed remain there? If Pshat in Isha Klizayno Aleha is she's not that scared because she always knows that they may just violate her, that will not be a reason for a woman who's not the wife of the man that was killed to remain there, the man that's being attacked to remain there. No woman wants to be violated, unless it's a wife that's concerned about her husband. If, on the other hand, pshat is that women aren't worried because they know that they won't be attacked because they won't attack a woman, so it makes no difference if it's the wife of the man who was attacked or with someone else, she's not concerned about being hurt and she will remain, and therefore not only is the wife accepted to say testimony, even another woman is accepted to say testimony. Says the Gemara, Hu Gavra, there was a man, the Bishili Hilule, at the end of his Sheva Brachis, Isla Nura Beganani, there was a fire that took hold of where they lived. It used to be that in the times of Chazal, during a Sheva Brachis, they used to have a special home where the Chasen Kala lived during the Sheva Brachis. Amla Devisa, Chazug Avroi, Chazug Avroi. So this home was on fire, and his wife was screaming, "My husband, my husband!" Asu Chazu, Gavr Charoika, the Shadi, they saw there was a man who was completely burned beyond recognition. And there was a severed hand laying there. So Rav Chibar Oven wanted to say, it's the same situation as when the woman came and said, the house, the cave that we were in, was set on fire. And just like in that brisa we learned, her testimony is not accepted. Here too, her testimony would not be accepted. Amar Rav. So Rava asks, "Mi Dami, are the two situations similar?" Hasam leKamra Chazoy Gavroy. In that case, there was a fire in the cave and in the house, but she didn't say, "Look at my husband who's burning." Furthermore, Oy Gavra Charuka the Shadi, there was a person who was completely burned, or Pissa the Yad the Shadi, and there's a severed hand laying next to him. It was a whole different situation, and here she should be believed. Rav Chibar Oven, how does he compare the two situations? He says, Gavra Charoika Deshadja, even though we see that there was a person who was completely burnt, Emo, we should be concerned. The Inish Achrina Osalat Sulei, there was another person that came to save him, Vachalte Nure, and he was burnt by the fire, the person who came to save the husband who was being burnt, Opesa the Yad Deshaja, and the arm that we see, the burnt arm that we see here, we should be concerned, the Neure Itliya, that the husband's arm was set on fire, and it was so set on fire that it was severed, Rachman al Tzlan, from his body, because he was embarrassed that he no longer had an arm, he ran away, but he's still alive, and therefore the man that's dead is the person that came to save, the man, her husband is still alive, and the hand that's there is proof that he's alive. That's how most Rishonim explain the Gemara. Other Rishonim explain that if a person's arm is set on fire, he cannot survive. And therefore, if either the corpse or the hand were proven to be the husband's, we could allow the wife to get married. What we're concerned here is that the hand is not the hand of the husband. The hand is the hand of the person that came to save him. We don't know for sure that this is the hand of the husband, and that the husband got wounded, not that his hand got burnt and severed. He got wounded or burnt in this terrible fire, and out of that embarrassment, he ran away. Continues the Gemara in asking, Ibailhu, Eid Echad B'Makam Mahu, similar to our previous Shaila, what would be the halacha if there's an Eid Echad, which as we've been learning, an Eid Echad, a single witness, is believed to say that a woman's husband passed away, but he's not believed in a time of war. And again, we only know that there was a time of war because of this Eid Echad. Will he be believed or not? Explains the Gemara its question. Tamid Eid Echad Mehemen. Is the reason that Eid Echad is believed, Mishin the Milsta Vida Legluya Le Meshaker, something that it could ultimately be revealed, a person doesn't lie. So if this Eid Echad is going to come and say that the husband died, when he's not dead, he's concerned that if the husband will show up, it will be proven that he's a liar, and therefore Hachad Nami Le Meshaker, he will not say something which is not true. Adil Matamid Eid Echad, why do Chazal rely on Eid Echad to say that a woman's husband died? Throughout Halacha, we know that the testimony of an Eid Echad is not accepted. The reason we accept the testimony of an Eid Echad regarding the death of a woman's husband, because it's the factor that the woman is always going to make sure herself it's indeed true that her husband died. Because as we learned in the previous year, there's a lot riding on a not on making sure that the testimony is true. Because if she will get married to a second man based on this testimony, and then the first husband will come back, the halacha will be she has to leave the second husband, and the children born from that second husband are mamzerim, and she may not return to the first husband. However, hocha lo daika mitzvah, here, since it's a time of war, so she's going to assume that for sure what the aide is saying, that the husband died, is true, and she won't do the proper investigation, and therefore we can't accept the testimony. So the very fundamental machloikus rishonim, what are the circumstances that the Gemara is asking the Shaila on? Tosfos learns that the Gemara's question, should we believe the Eid Echad, or should we not believe the Eid Echad, makes no difference if the Eid Echad said kvartiv, if the Eid Echad is saying that the husband, that he even saw the husband buried, or loy kvartiv. The question is, if under these circumstances, can we accept the testimony of the Eid Echad? Rashi says that certainly, if the Eid Echad said kvartiv, that not only did I see that the husband died, but I also saw that he was buried, there's no question that he would be believed. As we learned at the beginning of Shir, a wife too is believed if she said kvartiv. The only question is, if he didn't say kvartiv, what will be the halacha? The Rif learns that if the Eid Echad did not say Kvartiv, then there's no question that certainly he will not be believed. The question here is that even though the Eid Echad said Kvartiv, should we believe him or not? So the question is, if the Eid Echad said testimony and he said Kvartiv, I buried him, how can we have a question that he should be believed? Of course he should be believed. So I saw from the Beis Halevi, says a very interesting chiddush, and what is pshat daiko mitzvah. Normally we explain that there are two stages. There's a stage of Eid Echad, of an Eid Echad saying testimony, and then after Eid Echad says testimony, there's daiko mitzvah, that the wife investigates and makes sure what was said indeed happened. Says the Beis Halevi, that's not pshat daiko mitzvah. Pshat and daiko mitzvah is that if the aid knows that the wife is going to investigate and verify what he's saying is true, that he makes sure that his aid is accurate. And therefore, under these circumstances, with Eid Echad saying there was a war, and that will be a situation where the wife won't feel the need to independently verify what happened, therefore his Eidus is a weaker Eidus, and therefore even if he said Kvartiv, perhaps he should not be believed. Amar Rama Bachama, Toshma, Amar Bekiva, Bekiva said, Kshiratati l'Nador l'Abrashana, when I went down to Nador to make a leap year. And Tosfos asks, we know the halach is that the Pasuk says, L'shichnoi Tidrashu Uvas Hashama, that leap year should only be proclaimed in Eretz Yisrael. So why was Rabbi Akiva going to Chutz Laaretz to proclaim a leap year? So says Tosfos that the halacha that a leap year should strictly be declared in Eretz Yisrael is only when there are when the biggest Gedolei Yisrael are in Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Akiva was the greatest Gadol, and he was living in Chutz Laaretz. He was living in Eretz Yisrael, but he was going to Chutz Laaretz. Since there was nobody greater than him now in Eretz Yisrael, a leap year could be proclaimed even in Chutz Laaretz. Another pshat that I saw is that he was going to Chutz Laaretz to make the cheshbon to decide if a year, leap year should be proclaimed or not. But the actual proclamation would be done in Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Chanan quotes an interesting Tshuvas HaGa'inim. The Tshuvas HaGa'inim says that the halacha, that a leap year should only be proclaimed in Eretz Yisrael, is when a leap year is being proclaimed for extraordinary extenuating circumstances. In other words, the Gemara says there are a number of very clear reasons why a leap year should be proclaimed. For example, a Pesach is going to come out too early. However, if there are special circumstances that the Chacham see that this year should be a leap year, they allow to declare a leap year. But then that leap year could only be proclaimed in Eretz Yisrael. But if one of the standard reasons are being used, then that leap year could be even proclaimed in Chutz Laaretz. The Chasam Sofer quotes in a tshuva that when he was a young man, he once went to the city of Prague and he visited the Noi de Yehuda. And the Noi de Yehuda used this Gemara to explain a Rashi in Masechta Pesachim. Rashi Masechet Pesachim says that after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, it's possible to have 2 days Yontif even in Eretz Yisrael. And everybody tries to understand the Rashi. We know that in Eretz Yisrael there's always only 1 day Yontif, said the Noi of Yehuda. Our Gemara just taught us, the Gemara Tosfos, that under certain circumstances a leap year is proclaimed even in Chutz Laaretz. And in those circumstances, if the leap year is being proclaimed in Chutz Laaretz, then the Jews in Eretz Yisrael will not know when the new year is. And under those circumstances, we will have 2 days Yontif even in Eretz Yisrael. So says Rabbi Akiva, Kshirati l'Nador l'Abishonah. I went from Eretz Yisrael to Nador to decide about a leap year. Matzosi Nechemi Ish Beis Dali. I met Nechemi Ish Beis Dali for Amali, and he said to me, Shemati Shei Masinas Isha Beis Yisrael. I heard that they don't let a woman in Eretz Yisrael get married based on the testimony of an Eid Echad, El Rabbi Yehuda Ben Baba. The only one that allows such a situation is Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. V'namti loy ken advarim. And I said to him, this is correct. Omeli, emlam mishmi. So he said, tell the rabbanim in my name. Atam yidim hamdina zem mishubeshes begaisis. You know that this country is in turmoil because of a state of war. Kach mekablanim irugnil azokin. Shemesina isha pi erachot. I have a Kabbalah that we do allow a woman to get married based on the testimony of a single witness. Ask the Gemara, my Medina Meshubeshes Begaisas. What was he mean? What did he mean when he said that there's a time of war? Laugh. Didn't he mean to say, Afgad the Medina Zum Meshubeshes, that even though this war, this city, this country is in a state of war, Kach Mekablani, I still have a Kabbalah, Shemesina pi erachot. That we allow a woman to get married based on the testimony of an Eid Echot. So from here we see that Eid Echot Mehemen, a single witness is believed, even in a time of war. Amar Rava, ask Rava, Ihochi, if that's what he meant, Maishna Medinazu, why was he speaking about this country? He should have said, Kol Mokum Shiesh Geisus, that any time that there's a war, Miboile, he should have said that the Eid Echot is still believed. Elam Rava said Rava Hakama. What he meant to say was, Atam Yoidim Shemedina Zum Meshubesh Begaisus. You know that our country is in a state of war. V'loy Efshali Lemishbek In Shibesi, and it's impossible for me to leave the members of my family Umaisi Kamei Rabbanan to come in front of Rabbanan. But so therefore, tell them in my name, Kach Mekublanim Gamliel. I have a Kabbal from Gamliel, Shemesina Isha Pi Erechot, that a woman could get married based on the testimony of an Eid Echot. But we don't have a proof. What will be if the Eid Echot says it's a time of war? So Gemara attempts to bring a raya from the following brisa. Tashma. Ma'is b'shnei Tamid Chachamim. There was an episode with two Tamid Chachamim. Shoyeboinim Abba Yosef ben Simoy b'sfina. They were traveling together with Abba Yosef ben Simoy on a ship. V'tovo. And the ship sank. The Sea Rebbe Nishasim Apinoshim. And Rebbe allowed their wives to get married based on the testimony of women who saw their husbands drowned. Ask the Gemara. Vamayim Kamachamadama. Be drowned in a yam, in a sea, is similar to a time of war, where again there's a concern that the person saying the testimony is not being 100% accurate. Furthermore, Vinoshim. Even if we'll have a filu meyo, even if we'll have 100 women offering testimony, the halacha views all 100 women kerechadami, because one witness is not considered a kosher testimony. It's only acceptable under the special circumstances that Chazal allow, and so too women are not considered acceptable witnesses only under special circumstances. And yet we learn here, V'ktani Yisiyah, that we accepted the testimony of these women. So we see that the testimony of an Eid Echot, because many women are equal to Eid Echot, were accepted in that the husbands drowned, even though it's a time of war, is because they were the ones that established there was a time of war. Ask the Gemara, the Tisbra, can you then accept that this Braiser is referring to a situation that the women just walked in and said that the ship sank and the men drowned and therefore their wives may get remarried? Isn't this a situation of Mayim She'elim Soifnenu, water that has no end? As Rashi explains, any body of water which is so large that one cannot see from where he's standing all four shores, you could never accept the testimony that somebody who drowned in that water died, because perhaps he swam to shore and was survived. So Gemara, we're going to learn a daf kuf chaf aleph. And the halach is, man shein lem soif ishta asura. Ela, heichi dami, what is the circumstance that we accepted this testimony? The Amri, afkinu kamon, where they say that the bodies, not just that we saw them drown, but actually the bodies were drawn out in front of us, the chazinu la'altar, and we immediately saw them, the karma simonim, and they said identifying marks. And therefore, it's lav alayu samchinen, it's not on their testimony that we're relying, ela simonim, it's the simonim, it's identifying marks in the bodies, that's what we're relying to allow these people's wives to get married. So the fundamental machlokes Rashi and Tosfos, how to explain the Gemara. Rashi says that the reason we needed simonim, we cannot rely on the fact that they saw the bodies, was because the bodies, as soon as they drowned and they were in the water, were decomposed because of the sea, and therefore we can't just rely on the fact that they're identifying that these are the bodies. They also had to say simonim. Tosfos disagrees with Rashi, and Tosfos says that under normal circumstances, the sea does not affect the bodies that drown in it. Only if there's a mum, if there's a blemish where the water could seep into the body. So therefore, as soon as these bodies were dragged out of the water, they could have been identified. Yet, because it was women who were saying this testimony, and they're not considered normally acceptable witnesses, we could not just rely on the testimony of seeing the bodies. They also had to bring simonim. They had to say they were identifying marks proving that these were indeed the husbands of the women that they were talking about that had died. Now Tosfos brings up furthermore a very important point, which is really a very important introduction to the next piece of Gemara we're going to learn. Tosfos discusses when the Gemara here says that there was simonim, there were identifying marks that these were the husbands, that these were the men that they were saying who died. What kind of simonim were they? In simonim, as we learn in the Gemara Masechet Bava Metzia, there are two types of simonim. The simonim ufhokim, very clear identifying marks that everybody agrees is an acceptable simon, and it can be accepted. Or was it simonim beinanim, ordinary simonim, nothing unique? And the question Tosfos points out is, what kind of simonim do we have here? Which is really based on the Gemara Masechet Bava Metzia. What kind of simonim? The simonim by a Metzia certainly don't have to be simonim of Hakim, unique simonim. The question here is, what will be the simon that's required here? Tosfos seems to say that perhaps you need here simonim of Hakim. We're allowing women to get married based on the simonim. On the other hand, some Rishonim say that perhaps simonim of Hakim are not required here, because since the bodies were identified, it's only because of the other circumstances that we're requiring simonim also. Perhaps even simonim beinanim will be acceptable. The Halacha Masechet Bava Metzia, the Gemara also says that if one left a deposit of any item by a person, a mafkid and a nifkat, the halacha is that if when the deposit was left, it was left with edim, witnesses seeing this transaction. If the person comes and says, give me back what I left with you, and the person says, I gave it back to you. So the halacha is as follows. If he says, what you left by me, I still have, but I bought it from you. The halacha is that if he had left it with edim, that is not an acceptable taina, and he would have to give it back. What happens if what he left, he says, I gave you back what you left with me, and what you're asking, what you see that I now have, is the same item, but it's mine. I bought it elsewhere. Will we accept this taina or not? So as the Rishonim explained, certainly, if what was left was something not ordinary. For example, we can relate it to the Gemara we're about to learn. If someone left a 100-pound bag of wheat, of seeds, with his colleague, and now he comes back and says, those are my seeds. So that will be the question on Gemara, whose claim do we accept? But let's say he left a bag that was 90 pounds. And the normal size bag is 100 pounds. There certainly we will not accept that the person says, well, I gave you back your 90 pounds and these are a different 90 pounds. Because it's not usual to have a 90 pound bag. These bags are usually 100 pound bags. Or if the item was left is a unique item that is not normally found, there certainly we will believe the person that says, this is my item that I left with you. However, it says the Gemara, Hahu gavri the afkat shum shmi gavri chavri. Somebody left sesame seeds by his friend to watch. Amalei havli shum shmi. He comes back and says, give me my sesame seeds. Amalei shekaltenu. You already took them back. So the depositor says, v'chein v'chein havyut. They were this amount. And they were put in this barrel in your possession. Amalei. And the person watching the seeds continues with his claim. He says, "Didach shekaltenu, you took back your seeds. V'hani achrininenu, and these are different seeds that belong to me." Savar chizdalameima, hani shnei talmidei chachamim. Isn't this the exact same situation of the case of two talmidei chachamim? V'lo yamrinen, where we don't say hanach azlu la'alma, that these talmidei chachamim who were concerned died are no longer here, and the two talmidei chachamim that we identified. The two talmidei chachamim, the two people, corpses that we have, achrininenu, are different ones. Here too, we should assume that these are the same seeds that were deposited. Amalei Rava, so Rava says, mi dami, hasim kamri simonim. There were simonim given to prove that these were indeed the bodies of the two talmidei chachamim in question. Hacha, shumshmi, my simonis bu. Here there's no simon. So we can't compare the case. Uda ka'amr, and the fact that the depositor is able to say, kach v'kach havyin, such was the amount, amri chushbin asrami, it could be that it was the exact same amount, because that's the amount that's usually in the barrel. But there's no proof from the fact that he's able to say that I left this amount of seeds, that it's conclusive proof that they're the same seeds that were deposited. And again, the Rishonim go on to explain, based on how we began this piece of Gemara, that we could say that the machloikis between Rav and Rav Chisda is the Rav was saying that there by the corpses we had a simon muvhuk, and this is not a simon muvhuk. And Rav Chisda says, a simon muvhuk is not required, a simon beinani is enough, and a simon beinani we have. That's one way the Rishonim explain the machloikis between Rav and Rav Chisda. Others explain the machloikis between Rav and Rav Chisda, that even by the corpses, we did not have a simon muvuk. We just had a simon beinani, an average simon. But Rav is saying, here we don't even have a simon beinani. Seeds in a barrel, that's normal. And to that, Rav Chisda claims that perhaps I will agree that it's certainly not a simon muvuk, but to say that it's not a simon at all, I won't agree. Amalei makshisha bar Rav Chisda Rav Ashi. Umicha shine shem apinam. Are we indeed concerned that the person took out the seeds from the container, gave it back to the depositor, and brought new ones? Is that a legitimate halachic concern? Vatanan. Motza keli, we found the keli. The kotzel of kuf. And the word kuf is set on the container. So we assume that what the contents are carbon. Mem means meiser. Dal means demua, something which is a combination of truma and chulin, that the truma is not bottled. Tes represents that the item in the container is tevel. Tof represents that it's truma. Shemeshas sakana, times of sakana, you koisim tof tach truma. They didn't want to write out the word truma because the goyim did not allow them to give truma, so they would just write the word tof. So we see that we could assume that what was in the container remained in the container and wasn't removed and replaced. Says the Gemara, Amalei Ravina Rav Ashi. So Ravina says to Rav Ashi, V'loi chashin shem apina. There is no such a concern. Eima seifa. Let's continue learning the next part of that Mishnah. Rav Yosi Omer, Afilu matzah chavis. Even if one found a barrel of a kotzel of truma, harei lechulin. We could assume that it's chulin. Shani Omer, because we could say, Ishtak have a molit truma. Last year it was full of truma. Opinion was emptied out, and this item is not truma. So we do see that halacha does assume that an item can have been emptied out, and this is a different. There are different items in this barrel. So here too, why are we not assuming that the seeds that were in the basket were emptied out, and these are different seeds? And as the Rishonim explained, everybody conceptually agrees with Rabbi Yossi. For Hocho, the machloikis between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yossi is Bahokimifki. Masova, the Tanakhama holds, Im Isa the Pinua, if it would have been emptied out, Mechbahava Kofar, he would have erased the smock that says Tof or Kuf or whatever. He wouldn't leave that mark to make a mistake. But certainly it would be emptied out. But if it was emptied out, he would have crossed out that word, that letter. Vidach Rabbi Yossi says, Eime ishtali ishtali. You agree, we all agree that it would be emptied out. Why didn't he cross out the mark? Ishtali ishtali, he forgot to. Inami, lefan chishavke. Perhaps he intentionally left the mark for security purposes. Because by leaving the mark, for example, that it's tof for truma, or kuf for carbon, it's the best way of guaranteeing that people will not touch and the items in the barrel, because they know it's truma, they know it's carbon, something that they're not allowed to touch. In fact, I saw that the Pais can use this Gemara to answer an interesting shiloh. Let's say one is transporting matzahs, and he wants that the people who are carrying the matzahs should be careful not to throw around the boxes, the suitcases with the matzahs, in order matzahs easily break. But the workers may not know or appreciate what matzahs are. Is someone allowed to write on the basket, on the suitcase, on the box, glass? It's not true. There is no glass there. There's matzahs in there. Is that considered lying? So I saw from Rabbi Yoshev and from Yisrael Yankov Fisher and from Chaim Kanievsky that they all say that the person can write the word glass and it's not considered lying. Just, and Rabbi Chaim Kanievsky says that our Gemara is a proof to that. Because Agamar says that one can write the letter kuf, leave the letter kuf on a basket, that people should think there's a carbon in this basket. One can leave the letter tuf on a basket, leading people to believe there's truma in the basket, when indeed there is no truma, there is no carbon. Here too, one can write the word glass, even though there's no glass in the basket. Rav Yisrael Yaakov Fisher asked Rav Chaim Kanievsky, the situations aren't really similar. Because in the shaila that we asked, the person is writing glass when he knows there's no glass in the basket, in the box. He knows the matzis in the box. Here, when the tuf was written, there was truma, it only now is being left. It wasn't expressly written for the purpose to deceive.